You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Last year, we introduced you to Idaho native Kelly Sundberg when she joined us on Idaho Matters to talk about her heart-wrenching and honest memoir, Goodbye, Sweet Girl, a story of domestic violence and survival. At the core, Sundberg takes us into her abusive marriage and delves into why people stay too long in dangerous relationships. Both Vogue magazine and Oprah put that book on their must-read summer list last year. Kelly is joining us once again live in studio to talk more about the book and what she's currently working on. So good to have you back with us.
Thank you so much.
I have to tell you, we to this day still talk about your time coming on the program and talking about your book because of how raw and honest it is. So I want to start, in case people are not familiar with the book, about the fact that you grew up in Salmon, and you talk about how growing up in that small community in a way kind of made you who you were as an adult.
Absolutely. I think growing up in Salmon, and I love Salmon, and I don't want the book to be an indictment of Salmon, but growing up in Salmon was like growing up in a bubble, and I felt that there were very strict expectations for girls and mm-hmm. very strict expectations for boys. And even though I was someone who tried not to live that way, we don't realize how much that stuff gets into our brain, that it just becomes part of who we are.
Mm-hmm. Well, you even talk in the book about a neighbor boy and even that relationship and dynamic with him when you were children.
Right. He was really troubled. He chased me with a knife, and it was terrifying. It was a terrifying incident. And when it happened, no one took me seriously. They just kind of said I needed to toughen up. I think that's something, too. It's like girls need to be girls, but we also need to be tough. And we're getting these mixed messages.
Mm-hmm. And so then you move to Boise. You go to start at Boise State University. You meet your husband at the Neurolux, which here's what I loved about parts about the book. I mean, it was heart-wrenching, and I think it created great conversation. But when you live in Idaho and you read this book, you have these touchstones of what you were going through in your life at that time. So you meet your husband, and over time as you're dating, at least to me in the book, it seems like you had little red flags that maybe you didn't listen to.
Right. I had little red flags that I talked myself out mm-hmm. of. And I think that's another thing that happens to a lot of women. We learn how to rationalize. We compare maybe the behavior of men to other men we've been with. And the truth is my ex-husband wasn't my first lover who hadn't treated me well. Right. And so it was really easy to think, well, he's kind of got a temper, or he disappears, or he's fickle. But then I would compare that to other men. No one else had treated me or has treated me like him. But I would compare that to other men and think, but he's so wonderful when he's being good. And that's what I really wanted to show, is the seesaw, that no one has ever treated me better in the good moments than my ex-husband did. And honestly, now if someone treated me like that, that would be a red flag. but I didn't see it at the time.
Right.
I just thought, well, he's my dream guy, and so I'm going to overlook these red flags because I finally found my dream guy.
And also, you talk about in the book, though, about how you kept looking at yourself like, well, what am I doing wrong? What am I? And I think this is something that we hear numerous times from victims of abuse, is you think you're the problem and you're trying to constantly fix yourself so that they won't lose their temper.
Right. I'm an extremely self-critical person. I was already a very self-critical person when I met him. And I suspect that he recognized that about me. I suspect that probably made me seem like a perfect victim to him. Because when he would be upset, I would think, well, what did I do to bring this on? Or I have a moment in the book where I yelled at him and we fought and argued, and he hit me in the face. And it was one of the first times he had... Well, it was the only time he hit me in the face, because something we don't realize about abusers, too, is that they're very smart. They mm-hmm. don't usually hit the women in the face. He would hit me in my arms or on my back. Mm-hmm. But after he hit me in the face, he said, look what you did. You made me hit you in the face. And I just believed it. I think, too, I really saw him as this kind of, I like to describe it as this, as though I was in a cult and he was the cult leader. Mm-hmm. And I just, the way I was thinking was not, It was not rational, but it also wasn't, it wasn't that I was dumb. It wasn't that I was uneducated. It was that I had this person who had systematically and taken the time to brainwash me into thinking I deserved it.
And, you know, I, in the, as well, you also, I think you give him grace in some ways, which is that you look at, you know, how he was raised and the environment that he came from and how that kind of played a part in who he became as well.
Right. I don't think we can have an accurate investigation into how domestic violence happens in our culture if we don't look at masculinity in our culture. Mm-hmm. I wrote mostly, the book was predominantly about the ways that our culture groomed me to accept what happened to me, but I can't tell this story without also looking at, and to be clear, I don't know why he abused me, but I do know that he was raised in a culture that wanted him to be all boy, and that was hard on him, mm-hmm. and that he wasn't in many ways. He was delicate and sensitive in many ways, and so he felt oppressed in the same ways that I did.
And also, I mean, talking about that about him, I mean, very creative as well, because you're a writer, he was a writer, but there was almost a jealousy that started when you all of a sudden started, you know, I believe you were in getting your master's and you started getting published,
yeah.
Yet he was not.
I really think the catalyst for the violence to escalate, and it had already been present in the marriage, was that I started to have a lot more success than him at something that we were both trying to do. And I think that men are taught that they have to be the successful right. ones. I didn't think that Caleb was one of those men, but he definitely was. I would get a publication and he would be so happy for me. But then 2 or 3 days later, there would be an abusive incident. And it took me a while to realize that it was a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And once I realized it was a pattern, I stopped submitting things entirely because...
You thought that would stop it.
I thought it would stop it. And it wasn't because I didn't want him to hurt me. It was because I didn't want to hurt him.
Mm.
Because in my mind, if he was hurting me, that was really coming from his own pain. And so there was this kind of failure of empathy that I had. And I will be honest, I have this career that I always wanted now. I never would have gotten that if I hadn't left him. So I left him because he abused me, but I do feel like leaving him like opened up this opportunity for mm-hmm. me to live life on my own terms. And am I still struggling with my history? Yes, but I'm also doing everything I ever want. I'm 41. And if I had been a kid and someone said, what do you want to be doing when you were 41? This is it.
Mm.
So I do know that there is hope on the other side.
And take me to really that moment. When I think it was like, okay, this is it. And really it was, you were living in West Virginia in university housing in an apartment in a dorm with your young son
right.
at the time. And there was a domestic abuse incident. You go running out of the apartment into the lobby of the residence hall. And basically everything kind of blows up.
Yeah, I think... For one thing, that was the first time I ran into the lobby thinking I would be safe, and he followed
mm-hmm.
me. And he was screaming at me obscenities right in front of resident assistants. And so I knew that it was that, A, if he was unstable enough to follow me and risk his job in that way, he was going to kill me. And that, B, if I was ready to let people know what happened, because when I ran out that door, I knew people were going to see. And that if I was ready for that, then I was ready to make a change. And it took, I think it was a week, which seems like such a long time, but it was the fastest, most miserable week of my life. But then I left.
And you had a therapist tell you something fairly profound.
I'm not sure. She told me a lot of
right.
profound things. My therapist, Liz, is is the best. But she did tell me afterwards that she said she didn't think a tidal wave. She met me and she said, I didn't think a tidal wave would get you away from him when I met you. And 1 month later, you were gone. And what I realized then is that telling her about the abuse, that was me taking the step. That she was the first person I told. I showed her the bruises on my arms and she hugged me. And I just sobbed. I didn't even know her. It was the first time I'd seen mm-hmm. her. And she said, you needed that, didn't you? And she was right, I did. And then I left a month later. And so I think once I made that decision, it moved very, very fast.
Mm-hmm.
But coming to that decision was hard. And the real impetus, even before I ran out into the lobby, was that my ex-husband and I had been arguing and I was sobbing. And my son, who was seven at the time, well, he was six, he was just getting ready to turn seven, came and he put his hands on my stomach and he said, "Mommy, are you okay?" And his eyes, the way that he was looking at me, like they were searching. And it was the first time I thought, oh, he knows what's happening. Mm. And
because you talk about that in the book, where all of a sudden he would kind of go into his room, he would get quiet, like he kind of knew.
He knew exactly what to do when his father would behave that way. And he was being conditioned in the same ways that I was. And for a long time, I could convince myself that he didn't know, because I thought, oh, he doesn't notice.
He's little.
But he knew. And when I saw that, you know, as kids get older, they get this capacity for empathy. And when I saw that he was worried about me, I mean, I realized then, I think I'd over-empathized with his father, but I was definitely not going to put my child's unhappiness at risk because I wanted to make my ex-husband happy.
I'm speaking with author Kelly Sundberg. We're talking about her memoir, Goodbye, Sweet Girl, which just came out in paperback this week, if people want to get a copy of it. Talk to me about what the response has been to this book.
It's been a really wild year. I get so many emails and messages from survivors, and it can be hard at times. I try to respond to everyone, but sometimes I have to take a break and then respond once a week or something. The good news is that mostly I get emails from people who are already out. I do sometimes get emails from people who are in this situation. That's hard because I'm not a professional and I don't necessarily always know what to tell people. But I love being able to tell someone, "I'm so glad you got out." And I get a lot of emails too that from people who tell me that they never understood why women stay and that they finally understand. And that more than anything, because I know other survivors understand.
Mm-hmm.
I really think I wrote the book for people who haven't been there.
Well, and I think, too, reading the book is that I think there is a stigma about people who are in situations like this. You break every mold that I think people may think that a domestic abuse victim looks like. You are highly educated, highly successful. These are not things that I think sometimes go hand in hand, yet this crosses every boundary.
Oh, right. The stigma is just completely unwarranted. It's not grounded in any reality.
Right.
Domestic violence happens everywhere. And perpetrators come from all populations, too. Judges can be perpetrators. Doctors can be perpetrators. It's not just, you know, the stereotype that we have of some, I don't know, hillbilly.
Well, or some monster, right?
Or some monster, right. And then the thing about perpetrators, too, is that how they get away with it so often is that in public, they seem really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And people just, I think, don't understand how insidious it is. And actually, I would make a book plug. There's this book, the title is kind of, I don't love the title, but it's called Why Does He Do That? Inside the Minds of Angry and Controlling Men. It's by Lindy Bancroft. And I read that book after I left my ex-husband, and it opened my eyes in so many ways as to how these men can be so deceptive on the outside.
And that has to go back exactly to what you said about the conversations that we need to be having in our society about masculinity. Because
Absolutely.
Not only do we give girls mixed messages, we give boys mixed messages.
We do. And I am so grateful to be the mother of a boy, because I feel like that's my opportunity to raise someone who's really kind.
Absolutely.
And wonderful. And I'm his mom, so I'm biased, but he's going to be a good man. And I'm working really hard to make sure that happens, but also to make sure that he can be sad and he can have the full range.
You can have those feelings, that we can allow boys to have that and to be who they are meant to be.
Exactly.
So one of the things you're working on now is, you know, life after divorce and life after domestic abuse. One of the things I want to talk to you about is the fact that your son still has a relationship with his dad.
Yeah.
And I know the last time you were here, we talked off the mic a little bit about how some people didn't understand how you could allow, and I put that in quotes, to let your son still have a relationship with his father. And I remember you said to me, he's his dad, and there's a relationship there.
Yeah. There are two things. One is that people assume that if a man abuses his wife, the courts will take the child away from the man. It doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
Family courts in West Virginia did not factor domestic violence against the mother into family court decisions. So I was lucky to get primary custody. My ex-husband wanted 50-50, and I did get primary custody and managed to leave the state. My son is with his dad right now, and we talked this morning, and I said, "How's your summer going?" And he said, "Not great." And it's hard. It's the hardest thing for me. And as he gets older, I said, "Well, you know, as you get older, let me know, and maybe we can change things." But that said, he loves his dad, and I know he wants to spend time with his dad. And I don't believe his dad's physically abusive to him. People always say, "Well, how do you know?" Well, I really believe my son would tell me. And I have no – why would I lie about that? You know, he's my child. But he loves his dad. He and his dad have a different relationship. His dad likes to play board games with him, and they play Pokemon Go and things that I don't really like to do. And he wouldn't want to stop seeing his dad. And I want him to feel like he's in control of his life as much as possible. Because one thing, too, when I was being raised, or when he was being raised in that household with my dad and, or with his dad and me, he had no control over his life. And so one of my goals as a mother is to make him feel like I respect him and like he can make decisions. But he knows I will always protect him. And he knows he can tell me anything. And I'm glad when he says, "Not great." Not because things aren't great, but it means he's still talking to me.
And he's feeling.
And he's feeling, yeah.
So quickly, tell me about the new things that you are working on.
I'm working on a collection of essays. I had been working on a novel, and then I kept writing these essays. The working title's called The Witching Hour, Essays from and After. And the reason I chose essays is because I realized I wanted to write about a lot of different things in my life. I wanted to write about single parenting. I wanted to write about dating after divorce. I wanted to write about PTSD because I do have PTSD. I wanted to write about getting my PhD while being a single parent. And when you write a memoir, there kind of has to be a cohesive through line. And I just wanted to be able to look at all of these things individually. So I have an entire essay, for example, dedicated to driving my son to the 7-Eleven in West Virginia and dropping him off with his dad. I think there are things that are going to be relatable to people who, a lot more people than just survivors. Because I also wanted to write just about divorce from the same perspective that anyone else would see it. And single parenting is hard, but rewarding and beautiful. And I love it too. And I wanted to show that too.
And there is a difference between single parenting and solo parenting, as I say, because when my husband goes on a business trip, I know he's coming home and I only have to do this for a small amount of time. And it is a huge kudos to people who are single parents and that do it well.
I love being a single parent, but I have a great kid. And so I always feel like I have to offer the disclaimer. I think I'm a good single parent, but I think that's because he's just really great. And I see people who are up against so much else. You know, my son is able-bodied. He's smart. He has a good temperament. So I was really, really blessed in that way. There's a saying that God doesn't give you more than you can handle. And if that's the case, he did that with me because my son's dad was as much as I could handle.
I want to thank you so much for coming in. It is such a pleasure to talk to you again. Our guest today has been author Kelly Sundberg. Her novel, or her memoir, I should say, Goodbye, Sweet Girl, is out in paperback now. And when do you know when the next
I'm book? Still working on this book. I'm taking a long time. I want to do it really right.
All right. Well, we'll have you back on when it comes out.
Okay.
I appreciate that. Up next, the story of Matthew Shepard as an opera. I'm Gemma Gaudet. You're listening to Idaho Matters.